Hi there, it's Jillian, and I want to tell you about Jillian on Love Plus, your way to get even more Jillian on Love each week by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Patreon. You can access exclusive bonus episodes with extras including answers to your most burning questions, advice on all things dating and relationships, and much more. Check out the link in the episode description for more information. Hi there, this is Jillian on Love, and I am on a mission to teach people how to transform their romantic relationships by first transforming the relationship they have with themselves. So whether you're in a relationship, you're single or heartbroken, I've got you covered. I'm Jillian Turecki, certified relationship coach and teacher with over 20 years' experience helping people transform their relationship with themselves through their bodies, breaths, and minds. I have now coached and taught thousands of people to become better versions of themselves and change the way they show up for and within their love lives. In today's episode, I welcome back Mark Groves, but this time with his wife, Kylie Macbeth. Mark is a human connection specialist. He's founder of Create the Love and Felt, author of Liberated Love, and host of the Mark Groves podcast. In other words, he's a speaker, writer, motivator, creator, and collaborator. Mark's work bridges the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. His purpose is to empower individuals to step into their power, transform the way they relate to themselves and others, and create authentic change for a life and love they'll look back on with a resounding F yes. So those of you who know Mark's work know that he's phenomenal. And a big part of it is his wife. And he and his wife were once in a relationship and they broke up and they were very open about their breakup on social media. And they ended up getting back together several months later. And now they are married with a child. And so this episode is so important for a number of reasons. One, it's to give you insight into when it is a good idea to consider getting back together with your ex and when it's not. And even more so, they had a somewhat codependent cycle where he was more on the anxious side and Kylie was more on the avoidant side. And what I love about this interview and what I think is going to be so relevant for so many of you is that Kylie was able to generously share her experience with avoidance, how it manifested, and how she was able to heal it. And that's really important because a lot of us are walking around somewhere on the spectrum of attachment wounding. And when we don't have the tools or the language to describe our experience when we are in our wound, that is when we get ourselves into very rough cycles. And so you're going to learn a lot about boundaries. You're going to learn a lot about what it means to actually work on yourself. And you're going to learn a lot about how to have the 2.0 version of a relationship and make it much better than it was before. So get ready for a very honest, direct conversation between the three of us. And what I will say is that the two of them wrote a book called Liberated Love, and it chronicles their whole experience of being together, breaking up, getting back together, the personal work, the personal demons that they had to face within themselves in order to show up for each other. This book is amazing. I would say get it right away. It comes out literally tomorrow. Run, don't walk. So without further ado, myself, Mark Groves, Kylie Macbeth. Here we go. I'm going to dive right into it because I've been so looking forward to asking this very specific question, which is one of the questions that I get asked the most. Friends, DMs, people on all over social media, emails, and I'm sure you've received this question a lot too, is how do I know when I should give my ex a second chance. Another iteration of that is, how do I know if I should get back together with my ex? Do you think that there's ever a time when getting back together with your ex is a good thing, or is it always a bad thing? And I know that we'll get into this, but you two were in a committed relationship, ended that relationship, and now are married, I believe, right?
Yeah.
With a child. And so I'll just let you answer that question of when should one think about getting back together with an ex, and when should one say, no, I really need to not consider that?
Feels like an age-old question, that one. You know, we definitely got that question way more in our DMs after we got back together, because people are like, how did you do it? Tell me exactly how to get back together with my ex. One of the first things I'll say is I think the premise of getting back together, or that language, I'm such a stickler to language, is that it infers going backwards. And I don't think any reunion of any relationship in any way should ever require you to go back to who you were. And I think that's a key premise of it, is that as you're developing and working on yourself and really diving into your own self and relational patterns, et cetera, you should be meeting the person in the same direction. I think when you're so into that, into like really mastering that, you won't care if it's your ex or not. And when Kylie and I broke up from what we call relationship 1.0, we actually didn't expect to get back together. Like, the relationship was over. We did a closing ceremony. Like, we closed it up.
And I think that was an important piece. Like, we really needed to fully grieve the ending of that relationship 1.0 for there to even be space, or the question of, is there a relationship 2.0? Is there another opportunity for us to explore romantic partnership again? And I know that for me, I held on to that hope of let's get back together, even though Mark was like, there's no getting back together after relationship 1.0, which I completely understand. It really tested every single cell of our bodies and beings to be in that relationship and to try to make it work. So there was always this part of me that was like, well, maybe it'll happen, maybe it'll work out, because Mark's a good guy and we want the same things and, you know, all this stuff. And eventually, in that 10-month journey of being separated, I had to fully grieve the loss. And it didn't really hit me that I was still holding on to it in a really big way until probably month 8 out of 10 of us being separated, of like, oh wow, I still haven't fully grieved, because I still think that we're getting back together. Mm. And obviously we did, but the grieving process was paramount for me to release the idea, the fantasy, so that I could continue to mature out of old roles that I was still playing into and feeding into, in terms of the fantasy of Mark will come back. And not that he'll be my savior, because I think that narrative had died, but there was still an element of that, of like, there was some familiarity and some desire to create a relationship with him.
I think a lot of people go through a breakup and hold on to that hope that you'll get back together. I think usually what happens, it depends. Every situation is different. Some people are like, no, when they're done, when they make that decision is so razor sharp, and there is no, it's almost like there's a stubbornness to it. Like, there is no going back.
I had a bit of that.
Yeah. I think men in general have more of, I think men, when they make a decision, typically tend to really commit to that decision. Whereas I see, at least in my work, I can't say this across the board, but women typically, not always, because I've definitely worked with men who are hanging on. A lot of women will hang on to hope. So I love what you said about there's no going backwards. And I think that's so important, because one thing that I do tell people is it's never going to work a second time around if you're not willing to change.
Hmm.
If you think they are the only ones who have to change, you are highly mistaken. And also, it's not going to work, because then you think of yourself as their victim.
Right.
And then you're testing them, and you're just going to repeat the cycle.
if you don't change how you were orienting to them before, you almost through your own behavior end up influencing them to go back into an old pattern too. You know, it's like any familiarity. And that's why I think it is so necessary to at least own that the relationship is done. Like, to, in the book, we talk about getting right with reality, because you can't confront anything that you don't own as true within your own behaviors, within other people's behaviors. And I think the key to the question, do we get back together, or do I, or don't I, or is it right, is it wrong, is that there has to be such a level of self-trust and discernment that's cultivated through that process. And I think for even the question itself, what's interesting about the question, which is, of course, is such a common question, I would have asked it in my 20s too, and probably in my early 30s, is that it also confers some sort of external authority about the direction of what we should do. Like, I'm still asking other people what I should do with my relationship, as opposed to like, how do I, is it right for me? And I think that's a mistake we make in dating too, is that so much of our dating is actually from this place of, do they like me? Oh, I guess I like them. Do they want that? I guess I want that. We're reacting to them, not actually living from a centered space of ourselves, which, you know, is, we talk a lot about that in the book, is like, how do you come back, not living a self-centered life, but a life that is centered around who you are, that it's relational, that there's a me and a you, and that is an us, but it doesn't require that neither of us exist anymore, or neither of us have needs. It doesn't require self-abandonment.
This episode is brought to you by Rocket Money. Did you know that nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? And by the way, I'm one of those people. And before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had about, I don't even know how many I thought, but way less than I actually had. And I really could not believe it when they showed me I was paying for a lot more subscriptions each month. And between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it's never ending. But thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. And I'm so happy about that. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. And with Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses, which I just love. I can see all my subscriptions in one place. And if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps. It's really genius. And Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/onlove. That's rocketmoney.com/onlove. rocketmoney.com/onlove. So Liberated Love is the title of your book. And then you two wrote it together, inspired by your experience together.
Yeah.
It's kind of an autobiography mixed with, teaching principles of everything we learned from Relationship 1.0 and our sacred pause, which is what you call a breakup when you get back together, for all those who do get back together. And then Relationship 2.0 is like, how did we come back together and not fall back into old patterns? Not that that was even possible after the sacred pause, but one of the big things that really, I think, allowed us to get back together in a good way is we created a relationship dating container. Like, we said at the very beginning, we're going to date for 3 months without collapsing into we're back, next
the
steps,
assessment stage.
Children, you know, like, it was like, let's actually really feel into this and discern, is this the right, best choice for us at this time? Is a romantic container, a romantic relationship, the right, highest, best, most loving step for us both? And at the beginning, it wasn't. Like, there was a lot of material that Mark and I had to work through in that 3 month dating container to really get to a place where we both felt a full yes in our bodies and beings again. It was like all this stuff that Mark still, like, he didn't trust me. I was pretty ambivalent in relationship 1.0. I could never fully choose it for various reasons.
I was done with ambivalence.
And he was done with it.
Hell no.
And so it was good that he didn't collapse into trusting me again in the first minute of me being like, let's get back together. Let's explore this. Because I really needed to regain that trust. And so just to build some context around the dating process of how we actually did get back together, we didn't just get back together. It was a very intentional process that we took and set very clear guidelines and agreements around that process so that we could really feel into what is the highest, most loving path for us both.
Yeah. And for me, that was such a break of pattern because I'm more like the, you know, we sort of joke around that women watch Disney movies and then fall in love with the idea of someone right away. I'm that. And so I get a connection with someone and then I'm like, oh, I guess we're married and life is already happening in my head. But what the dating container where there was like a 3 months, okay, we're going to talk about this, you know, how's it going? Check in with each other throughout that. And then there was a 3 months, we're going to make a decision. Of course, the dialogue was happening en route to that. But I remember being like, all right, we're back together. Like this is...
In like week one, Jillian.
Yeah.
Of the 3 month
I was like, oh, we're actually like, in a container.
No, we're not. These...
Yeah. And it was really interesting because for me, and that's why I was saying about, do I get back together or not? I had to cultivate that level of discernment that, wait, this actually isn't a fit for me. I'm so used to just being like, oh, we have a connection and we're together. But I actually could feel in my body this recognition that I'd put my body and my heart into circumstances that I needed to have been more discerning about. Like Kylie's ambivalence in relationship 1.0, I stayed way longer than I ever should have in hindsight if I had that level of discernment. And so there was a recognition that, oh man, I'm so used to bypassing for a relationship. I'm so used to bypassing myself for connection. And so there was a lot learned through actually just the constraints of that container, which really, you know, at the end of the day, the container is about creating agreements. And having good agreements is very predictive of relational outcomes. You know, and I know you talk a lot about that too.
Yeah. So speaking of agreements, would you be willing to share a little bit of the kind of conversations you had during this 3 month container to support honesty and kind of moving things along? Like, what did those quote unquote hard conversations look like? Were they every day? Were they once a week? Were they in bits and pieces?
And there wasn't like a predictive time, but they were at least once a week.
At least.
Yeah. They were quite regular. They were quite a part of our regular dialogue because, you know, we were excited because we were exploring this again.
Some of the agreements of that container specifically, one was we're not dating other people. So there was exclusivity even in the dating process as we were exploring our connection. So there was no other person or people vying for our attention or consciousness.
Which I think that's pretty much necessary.
Like, but, you know, I would agree with that. People don't, but you know.
Yeah, some people don't. And I think that for us was just to create the safety.
More ambivalence. You know, just insert anxiety into that.
Create the safety and the level of devotion in which we were entering into this container.
Yeah.
Into this 3 month journey together. It was like, okay, we're going to remove everybody else and we're just going to focus on each other. The next one we did was, Mark hates this word, but
fucking every time.
There was no penetrative sex in the 3 month container.
Okay. Like I'm in health class.
You can't get no the, I don't know how else to say it.
When I was like, reading the audible, I was like, I've never said penetrative. So
many. Oh, and this was a huge one.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you both agreed to that. That was like one of the quote unquote agreements that you came to.
Yeah, it was. And it was for good reason. I didn't like it, of course, because you're getting back together and you're like, yo, I want to hit it.
I want to hook up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, no, no. So much of our dysfunctional relational patterns continue to play out in the set, in the bedroom, in the sex. And it's like, can we remove that, those dynamics from the table so that we don't soothe our activated nervous system or do we don't try to meet our needs through sex instead of actually having the hard conversations we needed to have? And sex changes things. Our hormones.
My brain goes right out the window.
It's just biology.
The irony is not lost upon me that I want to also accelerate sex as much as I want to accelerate relationships. So everything was like a deceleration.
Everything was slow.
Stay in my somatic experience.
Stay here. Stay fully here. And so we removed sex off the table. for those 3 months. And that, I feel like, was probably one of the biggest catalysts for us both to have a lot of hard conversations.
Yeah, it was.
And to really be with what was actually underneath, like the insecurities that were present in relationship 1.0, be with those in relationship 2.0 so that we could address them and actually talk about them and move through them in a more conscious way, I'll say.
Yeah. And I had to be really honest, like, yeah, I don't trust you. And, you know, the response she gave me when I said that was exactly what I needed, because she was like, you're right. And I get it. And she's like, I'm not going anywhere. And I was like, oh God, that's what I've always wanted to hear. You know, that feeling when you finally hear it, such a level of vulnerability and trust being restored, you know, because I didn't hear I'm not going anywhere mm-hmm. in the first relationship. It was like, I might actually go somewhere. So to hear that was really beautiful.
I think one of the distinction Mark always makes is it's not even just hearing it. He felt it. It was a somatic registry of like, oh, she means this to her core. And we can feel the difference, right? When yes. somebody's saying something and then somebody's actually embodying it. And that's the beauty of the sacred pause that in my journey that I had to go through after relationship 1.0 to restore the inner foundation of self-trust of like, oh, I can actually trust myself now because I'm actually in my body. I actually have access to anger again. I actually have access to my voice again. I actually, dare I say it, like I feel whole again. Like I feel whole yeah. here anchored in myself. And so that I am not repeating old patterns, but I'm actually listening and attuning and discerning what is actually true and honoring that instead of just collapsing into, yeah, previous scripts or ways of being.
It's very important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for about 2 years, I've been drinking AG1. One of the biggest reasons why I've also been drinking AG1 is that I don't actually like to take a bunch of pills. I feel like I'm not really absorbing them. And I actually really like to drink my vitamins. And I really like the taste. That's what's so amazing about AG1. Quality for AG1 actually isn't a buzzword. It is a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. And that, to me, is extremely important because I know that I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1. First of all, it's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard typically only tests for 10. That's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. Whether you realize it or not, it really is. And they do obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. And AG1 simplifies this by just covering all my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just like a minute. Also, what you must know is that AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality. And I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support, because that's huge. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/JillianOnLove. That's drinkag1.com/JillianOnLove. Check it out. I think that there's probably a lot of people listening who, you know, attachment styles has become so popular, whereas I think it's a brilliant system to kind of learn and understand. Give us a deeper understanding of people's relational patterns. I think it's one lens of many, or one lens that needs a lot of context in order to focus that lens. I think that a lot of people might say, oh my God, you know, that's me. I was in the relationship with someone who didn't choose me and was always ambivalent. And then I had to choose myself. And I think everyone, Kylie, or not everyone, but many people are very interested to hear what your process was of sort of dealing with that, dare I say, maybe avoidance. I don't know if you would call it avoidance, but did you ever?
I would call it that 100%.
Yeah. Okay. 100%. So like, what was your process to kind of, when I know you said anchor yourself and to feel like at home in your body to be able to show up, but if there's a little bit more detail that you can share.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when Mark gave me an attachment book. I think we were month three into our relationship, month three or four. And I remember opening it and reading it. So funny. And being like, nah, this is,
there's nothing get anything
like,
from this.
This and is I talking was like, about your
you'll appreciate
core imprints with your mother. Like that has nothing to do with the way I am.
You'll appreciate action on avoidance that you're avoiding reading.
Yeah, I avoided it for a while. And actually I have an identical twin and I remember talking to her about it. And she's like, yeah, there's nothing there.
I laughed. When she finally read it, she was like, oh. And I agree with you, Jillian. It's a great framework for understanding how we can be, but not that we are. You know, and we go through attachment, but overlay it with nervous system and all the different ways.
I was so avoidant. I was like, I did not trust myself at all to move into intimacy, to have boundaries. And I really think that's one of the main things at the core of like avoidant attachment is a lack of trust in self and in other in navigating vulnerability, boundaries, self, needs, etc. And I didn't have the skills. And the reason I didn't have the skills is because I was disconnected from my body. I was disconnected from clean anger is how we describe it in the book, is my ability to access an embodied no, the ability to access my inner fire, to stand up for myself, to have my own back. Because I didn't have access to that, I stayed really far away from intimacy or from him or from another because it was the safest place for me to be at a distance.
Yeah.
And controlling the depth of intimacy that was available to us by keeping that palm out and being like, don't come any closer. Because if you do come closer in my nervous system, that equals harm. That equals potential pain. I kind of swung. I was actually in my early 20s anxious and then I swung to avoid it after my divorce. I got divorced at 24.
I was going to say, was there an event? Because sometimes there's an event that happens. Okay, so you were previously married.
I was previously married. And then after the divorce, yeah, I was as voidant as they come. I was like, relationships aren't for me. I mean, there was even one moment where I was like, polyamory might be for me. Looking at that now, laughing and being like, oh, no, that definitely is not,
that's
not
such
your
a
path.
Classic.
Yeah, but underneath it all, I didn't trust myself.
Mm.
And I didn't have an internal foundation of self-trust and competence to stand on before entering into relationship 1.0 with Mark. And for me, a big piece of that after my divorce was financial stability and security. I had never seen women in my lineage stand on their own 2 feet financially.
I'm with you. Me too. I didn't see that either.
Like it wasn't so I was like, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that feels like. And not only do I not know what that looks like or feels like, but in my individuation process of gaining or I shouldn't say gaining, but like restoring that level of agency, I rocked the familial boat. I rocked my survival instructions, which were like, stay small, stay silent, stay subservient, stay right here in this powerless place, perceivedly powerless place, because that's the safest place for us to be.
Yeah. There's a lot of jumping off points here that I can go with. One is that avoidance or attachment doesn't necessarily come from parental relationships, but can actually be impacted by a traumatic romantic relationship, such as a marriage that ends in divorce. And then, you know, it takes so much self-awareness to recognize that when we enter a relationship, rarely are we seeing the person in front of us. We're seeing our ex, we're seeing our mom, we're seeing our dad. Like that projection is really real.
Yeah.
So is it fair to say that in your relationship with Mark 1.0, that there was a lot of that going on because you were still hurt from your divorce?
Yeah, absolutely. I got rocked. That was the hardest moment of my life because it led to exile. Like you do not get divorced, like in my family system or a part of my bubble. Like that was like a huge push for my soul to liberate from all systems of,
well,
because you're not free.
Because I wasn't free. Like it led to an exile. Now, of course, there's been so much repair and now we're groovy. And I think that for me, that exile was necessary. I really needed to fly the coop. I really needed to expand my wings. I really needed to go on my own path so that I could be here and having this conversation with you and Mark. But yeah, Mark Wolin, in one of my sessions with him, was like, man is mother until you do the mother work. And I'd say a big projection onto Mark was mother for sure for me. Like, I really wanted him to be my mother. I know it sounds so unsexy, but it's like so true. I wanted him to meet all the needs.
It's so real.
And it was so real and so tender. Like, he's such a kind, sensitive man. This is not fair to him, but like, he's also really good at mothering. Like, and this is also a grief. This is a grief point for him too.
As long as it's not.
No. I'm saying in relationship 1.0.
No, and I'm saying I take it as a compliment, as a skill set. But much like the avoidant is afraid of closeness, mostly because they don't trust themselves in closeness, the other person who's generally in relationship with them is like, finally, they figured it out. They trust themselves. They're moving towards me. No, it's like we still leave our center to go get them. And it's actually why they can't trust closeness with me, because I couldn't stand for myself. So when you say I'm tender like a mama, hey, man, I'll take it, but it's got to have some boundaries around it and some,
but in relationship,
some trust. It didn't.
It didn't in relationship.
Well, yeah, I stayed with an ambivalent person. Like, how could you trust me? I told you, like, choose something and I wouldn't choose something.
But
it was such a projection.
Quote unquote, the broken one and the one that needed saving and fixing. And Mark was the beautiful savior and
had a whole business based on it.
Tried to meet all my needs. Like, looking back on it, like, he really did step into mother role for me.
A lot of people step into, and it's not gender specific. It's like,
right,
there are just many people who want to save others. I think, look, if we look at it from a human nature perspective, I think that everyone on at least an unconscious level knows that it's important to be needed. Because when we're needed, people keep us around.
Yeah, we're safe.
And so we know that. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I'm curious, like, what's your battery like right now? Like, how are you feeling on the inside, like, with social stuff? Do you feel drained? Do you feel bursting with energy? Do you feel like you have been less social in the winter and now you're feeling more social? You're feeling not having enough boundaries and feeling a little bit tapped out? Because it can be really easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with a lot of social stuff picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? That's a really important question to ask oneself. How do you recharge? Another really important question. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time, or maybe it's a combination of both, or maybe it really just depends on what else is going on in your life. And therapy can help give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. That's huge, because sometimes it takes a couple people to try out until you really find your match. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/onlove today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onlove. Eric Fromm, the writer, philosopher, wrote it best, which is, I'm actually paraphrasing, but it's, you want to need someone because you love them. You don't want to love them because you need them. And so need is an important part. It's not just about meeting. Like, we need to be needed by each other. Where the codependency fine line is, am I keeping you in my life because I need you? Or am I needing you in my life because I love you and want you in my life?
Yeah. I like that. One of my favorite books, The Art of Loving.
Yeah.
We really, through relationship 1.0, then the sacred pause, and to relationship 2.0. Actually, I forgot to mention this, but in the agreements for the container was a deep dedication to just truth, like telling the truth. Because our intention at the end of the container was not to get back together. Our intention was to honor what was right for both of us. Mm-hmm. And so like one of the principles of liberated love that we talk about in the book is honoring each other's path as your own, you know, as each of your own. Because I'm not negating the positive desire to walk through life with someone. We're married, obviously, you know, we have a kid. Obviously, that's the desire. But it doesn't come from the avoidance of the conversations that we think will deviate the path. That's the thing is then if I think her pursuing her passions, her having a stronger voice, her being, you know, fully embodied, if I think in any way that's going to make her more attractive to other men and she might leave me, or she might leave me because this is directing her somewhere else.
Because I don't need you.
Right. But the moment I then go into control, now we're not, there's no liberation. That's codependency.
Right.
Yes. So I'm unconsciously generally. That might be the way I respond when she gets excited about wanting to study something or wanting to move somewhere. It might be the way I respond. It's subtle, but it's still like, I don't want you to become too big, because if you become too big, you might leave me. And yes, we're really saying like, it's actually through the telling of that truth, you know, right now through the dynamic, Kylie's full-time mom, I'm taking care of us right now. And so there is unconsciously an inherent power dynamic because I'm paying for things. Mm-hmm. But we explicitly talk about it. Like it doesn't do it now because we're in it. But for a lot of people, it's not saying power dynamics don't exist or trying to eradicate them. It's actually making what's implicit explicit, because so many people will stifle their voice because they're the rent's being paid by someone. But you got to share it or else it shows up as contempt. It shows up as resentment. And it's also a way, like, you don't have to look very far in history to see financial abuse. You know, it's happening today. So it's like, we're saying like the frictions you have in connection, romantic relationship especially, are exactly the material that will liberate you, not just in your relationship, but actually in every area of your life. Because you can't be fully self-expressed with your romantic partner and then go to work and be like, oh, I can't share anything I think or feel. Like it's not possible.
I agree. I mean, I actually think integrity, aside from congruence between word and action, is really just about congruence of self. So it's like who I am, you know, in my romantic relationship is like my values there are my values elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so I'm not like this fragmented person. I mean, we all wear different hats and have different elements to our personality and whatnot. But like, as far as values are concerned, where I'm not fragmented. What you see is what you get. Who I am as a parent is who I am as a boss, like all of that. So how do the two of you navigate conflict now that's different than how you navigated it in 1.0?
I don't know if we navigated it well, if at all, in 1.0. I certainly didn't have access to my voice in a way that would have rocked the boat. I would more withdraw and shut down. And I'd say Mark would have been the one leading the intimate, challenging conversations for a majority of relationship 1.0. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it was pretty good at bringing them forward.
You were.
Because I had to.
And I kind of like, just agreed.
There's ambivalence here.
Like, I just kind of agreed to whatever needed to be said. I know that sounds bad, but like in hindsight, it was just like, I'm just going to agree to keep everything okay. Because that's where I was sourcing my safety and security.
Got it.
Through him. Which that was a very young part, a very old part of my story. And as relationship 1.0, as I did a lot of healing work in that relationship, I started to gain a little more access to my inner mature woman self who could stand up for herself and bring voice to some of the frictions in our relationship. And that was actually through the help of a psychotherapist. I'll never forget it. He was like, what's behind your smile? And I collapsed.
Yeah, I remember.
And I was like, oh gosh, somebody's seeing me. Run. He made me have a commitment to myself that every single time I was frustrated with Mark or had a friction, I needed to bring it forward. And so I made that devotion. And it was so challenging at the front, but it was because it was brought forward in a conscious way where
and
I was
part
Mark,
of that devotion.
Like I need to reclaim access to my voice and to my frustration. Can you help me in this process? So that was a part of relationship 1.0, but how do we navigate conflict now?
Great. I mean, I think we don't avoid any of it. It's like head on. And there's a deep level of desire to work together to resolve whatever we're moving towards. But also, you know, one of the principles that we talk about in the book that we live in, and I think it might be one of the most beautiful aspects of our relationship today, is that if something's coming up for one of us, it's coming up for both of us. Like we just, the other just might not be able to see it. So where we might have looked at Kylie's ambivalence in relate, might have, we did. We looked at Kylie's ambivalence in relationship 1.0 as what is wrong with her that she has ambivalence. Like what is wrong with her? As opposed to, like, I love that she talks about this, but like her body was the canary in the coal mine for our relationship. So actually, why can't she come close to people who are divorced or da da da? But actually, because on a deep level, I was still anxious and still like, I wasn't standing in my own self.
Yes.
So relationship 1.0 actually couldn't work. Like she wanted to leave it because the template of it wasn't going to be functional for a really deeply loving, long-term relationship where we wanted to create kids. So we started to orient in 1.0, which brought the ending of the relationship, was this recognition that you're not broken. What happens if there's actually something incredibly wise and I'm just so used to bypassing my sense of discernment that your discernment is actually, your feeling of avoidance is actually right? And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like one person is actually running from the thing that the other person has learned to bypass the sense and just runs towards. So in relationship 2.0, there's really very much an honoring of what's coming up for each of us, not invalidating what's coming up, because maybe it might not be accurate, but through the dialogue together that we continue, you know, we're like on a journey of trying to figure out where we want to live. And that one just keeps coming up because we're still in the journey of figuring out where we want to live. It's just safe. And that feels nice. Yeah. You know, even when there is intensity, it's not unsafe. And the intensity is welcome because I'm not afraid of her intensity. She's not afraid of mine. And there's always repair.
Yeah. And we're devoted to one another and to capital T truth of whatever, you know, continues to unravel. And we both know in our bones that love exists no matter what happens. I think that was the gift of our closing ceremony and the way we ended relationship 1.0 is there was unconditional love present. Like if things end, love still exists here.
Yeah.
And wow, when
that's
things
a deep
end
safety.
And love still exists and there's no exile and there's no shaming and blaming, you know, all the things that we can get caught up in. It just creates such a bedrock of safety. Now, of course, we're not going anywhere because we are devoted and committed to one another. Could we? Yes. But the foundation for safety is there. So, yeah, I don't know. Conflicts and stuff just feel so much easier in our nervous system. Our shared nervous system is just like, all right, let's navigate this.
This show is sponsored by Miracle Made. Did you know that your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality? I know that when I get hot in the middle of the night, that's it. Insomnia just gets me. But even if you wake up too hot or too cold, what I would say, I highly recommend that you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. They are inspired by NASA. They use silver-infused fabrics and make temperature-regulating bedding so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. It's just my dream come true. Plus, this is really gross, but did you know that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat? It can lead to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses, and it's just gross. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth and requires up to 3 times less laundry, you know, and they're comfortable. Because let's face it, that's really what's most important. They are luxuriously comfortable without the high price tag of other luxury brands and feel as nice, if not nicer, than sheets used by some 5-star hotels. That's huge. So go to trymiracle.com/Jillian to try Miracle Sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo Jillian at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. And they're so confident with their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll actually get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/Jillian and use the code Jillian to claim your free three-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/Jillian to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. It's all about foundation. And what I'm hearing the most from the both of you is really just accountability. And I think that what people have to differentiate is there's a difference between being in a relationship with someone who is highly dysfunctional, aka immature, rude, low character, and is just not on your level, you know, just not on your level emotionally, mentally, character-wise. That is so different than being in a relationship with someone where there's a dynamic that's being co-created. Maybe one person is more avoidant. Maybe one person is a little bit more present or more anxious. That's so different. And if you're in the latter, it's so important not to villainize the other person and say, like, just what you were saying earlier, Mark, like, it's not about like, oh, they need to go fix themselves and then we're good. Because that is a guarantee it's not going to work out again. There has to be 100% responsibility for your experience of that relationship. Would you agree?
The principles of liberated love. You have to have 100% self-accountability. As soon as you step out of that and try to fix, change, blame, shame, control another, or have contempt for another, like you said, you're not in a liberated dynamic. But I love your differentiation of the character and the misalignment of like just the level. I think that's so key and crucial for people.
Yeah, people are like, well, part of the pattern is to continue to try to function more, to try to fix, to try to change. Again, we're like, if I finally do X, they'll become. And it's like, man, at what point do we change how we orient to people not changing? That's the key.
Because like, we're not changing.
Exactly. Like at the core of it is I'm having to leave my center. You know, I think about how many people want someone to read a book or listen to a podcast to get them to understand something. I know that if Kylie asked me to read something, it's important to her, you know? And I think, you know, instead we might leave a podcast on in the car while we're driving and be like, oh, this is interesting.
Totally. Maybe. Like, I hope they like pick that up and realize they have to change.
Right. And what a beautiful thing it is. And I have so much compassion for you if you're listening and you don't have this yet, because it is possible for everybody. But what a beautiful thing it is to be able to share your greatest fear, your greatest frustration, and your partner be like, I get it. I hear you. You know, maybe a little defensiveness in there, but that there is this recognition that your partner sees things that you don't see about yourself. It was a complete shift for me in my 30s when I started to see that the feedback I was getting from women was actually an accurate barometer of how I was actually showing up and very valuable. I started to see that it was through that feedback that I could actually massively increase my growth. It was the fastest path to self-actualization, you know. I don't know what that destination looked like. Maybe I'll be floating on the top of a mountain. But my wife's perspective and view of me and what she sees is actually the fastest way for me to become better in every area of my life.
Well, that definitely requires a lot of letting go of the ego. Like, you can't be all ego and be willing to take feedback like that. I think the delivery of feedback and the receiving of feedback is so incredibly important in a relationship. Yeah. So you wrote the book together. How was that process? That's a big undertaking to take it together.
Yeah. You know, it was great preparation to have a child.
I was going to say, must have been.
As you could probably sense, we have very different styles of creativity, especially.
We have very different relationship to creation. Our creation sequences could not look any more different.
You know, it's actually funny because how we had a baby is a great metaphor for our creation sequences. Kai's is slow. She builds the baby. I was part of the initial very long lovemaking
conception.
Yeah. But I think it was great because there was a conflict of these two worlds having to intersect. And one of the chapters in our book is about liberation through limitation. And that is very much, I had to learn a lot of liberation through like, oh, you're going to be writing at this time. This is when this is due.
His body and being does historically, but also I would still say we're working towards massaging this, limits, time constraints, limits. Like, you know, you've written a book, there's deadlines and you got to like keep up.
With, I'm aware.
With these deadlines. And I'm like such a person that's like, let's be prepared. I'm let's like, start working on this 6 weeks before it's due.
You need like, the pressure. He needs the pressure.
He needs the pressure. And I'm like, I crumble under the pressure. And so it was, we were just like doing this. And at some point in the writing of the book process, I completely had to surrender. I noticed myself actually go back into old survival strategies of like, I'm just going to do it all on my own. Because he's not going to show up, just like really taking the brunt. And I had to, you know, very much how it could have happened with Babe, with our son. I'm just going to do it all because he's not. And it's like, no. We really had to work through that pattern together.
And she was pregnant for the last part of it.
And I was pregnant for pretty much all of it. So I had to not fall back into like taking it all on my own. And instead saying like, hey, here it is. This is
here's your assignment.
Here's your stuff. Like, this is when it's due. And if you want to wait until 5 minutes before it's due, great. But at least I'm going to get what I need to get done because I'm not taking on more than what's mine in this journey.
It was great. I was like, sweet.
And it really created a pressure cooker for him because he kicked and screamed sometimes about that. And I was just like, I don't know what else to tell you. Like,
writing a book is hard.
It's hard. It's hard.
Oh, yes. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Yeah. Yeah, maybe not the hardest thing, one of the top two.
Right?
Hardest things. Yeah.
Especially because it's the distillation of everything.
It's the distilling of thought of everything that's up in here. Yeah.
Yeah. And like we go through basically both the things we've learned individually and together are weaved into this. So like the person reading it or couple, because it doesn't matter if you're single or in a relationship, you can work through everything we've worked through in a book. I think that's such a neat thing is that there's this encapsulation of an experience in these pages. And our Audible, we actually recorded conversations after each chapter for the audiobook.
Oh, that's very cool. And I actually think I want to encourage as many single people to buy it and to read it because you got to be preparing. Like you need to know the kind of relationship you want to create in order to be discerning enough and choose the right person for you. Because if 3 months in, I really think that within 3 months, people really do tell you who they are. I think that you can really uncover a person's, the way they navigate the world and their character, I would say around-ish the 3 months. But like a lot of people will, you know, see someone for 3 months and then because they don't have a clear enough and definable enough blueprint of what it is that they want their relationship to be. And so because they haven't figured that out themselves, they end up staying in these relationships with people that are completely wrong for them. So I always tell people, like, as a single person, you should be getting all the books about couples because that's how you prepare.
First, I think if you're single, it is easier to transform something because you're only one person.
Yeah.
You know, and you're changing who you're choosing and how you orient to dating and you're having building a ton of relational self-awareness. And of course, as the saying goes, your wounds occur in relationship and that's where they must be healed. So we do bring these tools to the relationship and then flex them. As you're saying, in the first 3 months, you get a lot of information. And, you know, for couples, it walks through like how to create a container for the couple too. One of the things that I find really, I don't want to say it's funny. It's kind of funny, but it's like whenever I work with someone, like recently I was working with a single woman and we agreed that she would take 3 months from dating and like no interaction, no dropping DMs, no Tinder, nothing. And she wanted to do it. She, from a soul level, knew she needed to do it. And this is why you need to like stop being in relationship to the drugs so you can see how you relate and all the things that come up when you're not taking all the interactions, et cetera. And she was like, well, 3 months, like I could do 1 month. And I was like, you're negotiating with what you're capable of. That's actually such an important teaching moment because it's like, you don't even trust that you can go 3 months. Like, just as a, like, if I'm not emotionally attached to that commitment, it's actually pretty simple, you know? Yeah.
3 months to me is nothing. It goes by like that, you know?
And what you build in that time is way better than what you build on Tinder.
Yeah, 100%.
You get that radar part where there's no one around anymore. And it's just like the, do you want to expand your search? Do you know what I'm talking about? When you like run out of matches?
I've never been on a dating app.
Okay, as the only one who's been on a dating app here, there is a moment where you run out of swipes and it's just your head and a radar being like, there's no one around you. It's a very lonely moment. I did it in New York once. I remember being like, how is there no one?
Like, how is that actually possible? Yeah. When does your book come out? When can people get this?
April 16th.
Yeah.
We're so excited. Liberated Love.
Liberated Love. Well, we will be, you know, releasing this episode right before that. So where can people find you, find the book, give me all the information?
First off, thanks for having us on your podcast. We're very grateful.
Oh my God. I'm very grateful to have you both here. Are you kidding? I mean, I could talk to you for 3 hours. It's just like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm going to speak to the team and see like, can we once in a while just like have one of those really long episodes that some of the big podcasters have? You know,
I think we need to do that, like in person.
I know. In person, I think so. I think it makes a very big difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, nonetheless, we're so grateful.
Yeah.
And to you, the listener, thank you for trading time to listen to us. And the book you can get anywhere you buy books. And if you want, we also created a free download for a meditation and a workbook that goes with it. And you can just go to createlove.com/liberatedlove. And just enter your order number. And also the links to where to buy the book are there too.
If you're looking to find us anywhere else, you can find us on Instagram at Being As Beautiful As Me, Kylie, and Create the Love is Mark.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jillian.
Amazing. Thanks, yeah. People, you must get this book. You must read it. Because here's the thing, you know, everyone talks about quote unquote doing the work and self-awareness and, you know, why that's so important. And the two of you are both a beautiful example of what that means, of what it really means to cultivate self-awareness, but because you did the work of searching inside yourselves to really figure this out and to create a new relationship. So I thank you all for doing that. I thank you for documenting it in your book, Liberated Love, because a lot of people need it. For you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for this week's episode of Jillian on Love. I would bet that this is going to be a very impactful episode for many of you, and I really want to hear your thoughts. Please never hesitate to reach out to me and my team at hello@jillianonlove.com. Let us know how the episodes land for you. Ask us questions. Give me requests for episodes because I do this for you. And if it feels organic to you, please do not hesitate to share this episode or any other episode with someone who you think even just a little could use it, because we never know that by hitting the share button, we could be actually changing someone's life for the better. And so I thank you for being here, and until next time.
Jillian on Love is a Q-Code production. Executive produced by David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Shin Yin Hu, editing and music by Will Tendy.
I'm Carlos King, one of the most sought-after executive producers in reality television. I am thrilled to announce Reality with the King, where we'll discuss all things reality TV. I have interviewed everyone from NeNe Leakes, Teresa Giudice, and Kenya Moore. Each episode, we will rehash shocking betrayals, honey. Yes! Hilarious shade! And all the drama. Reality with the King podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.